Welcome to episode 361 of The Lab. I'm Brad Barton.
I'm Phil Barton.
This is one in our continuing series on language and communication. If you'd like to catch the other episodes, you can find them by visiting thelabwithbrad.com.
Makes me want to go there right now.
Your labwithbrad.com. Well, thank you for what I'm hoping is only a little sarcastic.
Well, brother.
It's not like we listen to our own shows ever. I mean, I edit them, so yes, I do.
Yeah, over and over.
I get sick
and over.
Of every single episode as part of the process.
Right.
And we do all this on the internet.
Yes.
And we're talking about where the internet came from today.
Well, here we are.
And it all started with telegraphs.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, even before the telephone, they had come up with ways of sending text across these wires, even across oceans, various teletype machines.
Yeah, that's some excitement.
So that's sort of step one.
Okay.
And the telephone comes around, and they almost immediately started running into problems. Because it's one thing when you string up a wire between Baltimore and Chicago or whatever, and you say, Watson, come here, I need you.
Famous. Right? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's not where that happened, but you get the idea.
The details aside.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Then you run into things where you're like, oh, there's dozens of subscribers to the telephone service in this one little town.
Yeah.
So they started to have an operator.
Right.
An operator.
With the little headset.
One ringy dingy.
References the things.
Yes, yeah. And a bunch of patch cords they'd have to plug in here and there.
Yes.
And that was doing okay. Until they started to get national and even international.
Yes.
Now they've got thousands of different individual locations to deal with.
Right, right.
And the handling of which switch went where got increasingly complicated.
Huh. I wonder, you have operators calling operators.
I wonder. And as a matter of fact, the vacuum tubes come along, which was more reliable than what they've been using before.
Okay.
It's part of the reason why they were able to make national and international networks.
Oh, okay.
So that was good.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, vacuum tubes also go bang.
Notoriously.
Well, not really. Yeah. So that was an issue. Didn't really get solved until the transistors started popping around. But even before then, a guy named Claude Shannon, I think it was, came out with a paper that said, you know, if we took all these relays and switches and arranged them correctly, they could solve any arbitrary mathematical problem.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, even before they got into making the big, huge, giant computers, a guy had figured out how to make big, huge, giant computers.
So this was just all in his head.
Yeah, actually, I am certain I got that name wrong. Claude Shannon was the encryption guy. Never mind, different name.
We're going to give him credit, though, someday.
It's in one of the episodes we did earlier.
So you just find by going go to back the lab there, listen to all of them, you know, from the beginning.
That's what you need to do. So then they started making giant computers.
Okay.
And they'd fill rooms. They'd fill buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way to increase capacity at the time was to make them even bigger.
Okay.
And cram more equipment into an even larger space.
Then you have to make a building after a while. Yeah.
Yes, and one of the things that you also needed was to keep it cool enough to keep running, because it certainly was pumping out a lot of heat.
Mm-hmm.
The problem was these cooling systems were making it more and more difficult for the actual computer engineer types to get their hands on the hardware.
They were freezing themselves out? Or
yeah, freezing themselves. No, the stuff was just in the way. And at the time, programming a computer was more like doing one of those telephone switchboards than sitting down and typing out a program.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So they started using remote terminals as a workaround for this. And somewhere in the 1950s came up with the idea, you know, instead of having it so that one guy can work on one terminal, suppose we have multiple terminals, and more than one person can be involved with this computer at once.
This is very exciting, yes.
Started with the thing called time sharing.
Yes.
Which is a simple model, but a step in the right direction.
We're on the way, yes.
So the time sharing had gotten started by 1956.
Mm-hmm.
In 1957, in October, Sputnik flew overhead.
Yes. There's a lot of blame to be... it's not blame.
Well, it was motivation.
Motivation came out of Sputnik.
Yeah.
You're kidding me.
The Russians got into space, and it was broadcasting a little radio signal, and the amateur people were picking up from the United States going, oh, my God.
Right?
They got there first. Yeah. This caused a perceived technology gap, which suggested there might be a missile gap.
Oh, yeah.
So the Russians were making more and better missiles than we were. This is a problem.
Right.
So.
Develop.
In 1958, the United States formed DARPA. Defense Research and...
Defense and Research? DARPA. D-A-R-P-A. Oh, hold on here.
Yeah.
Defense and Research on Penguins and... I was going
to
say...
Oh, I meant to write down what these acronyms meant, and I didn't.
Oops.
Hold on. But DARPA got started. Hooray for DARPA.
They're important.
Yes. They weren't quite sure where they were going to go next. Just like we aren't,
right?
Which we talked about on Monday. Our sponsors: water absorbent boats and invisible car. Wait a minute. Losses due to parking or traffic are not the responsibility of the corporation.
Right? Who was that? Wonder Woman. Yeah, she had the invisible jet.
You got to be really careful when you park that thing.
Oh, man.
I imagine after the first 5 minutes of flying that it wouldn't be invisible so much anymore, just with the dead bugs and birds all over it.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even think of that. Never mind the rain or, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, do you think an invisible car would be safer if they could still see you?
No, because, excuse me, it took me a minute.
There's still no car.
So there's actually a phenomenon that motorcycle riders have to experience every day where I forgot, it's conditional blindness or something like that.
Oh, hey.
Yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up. We've got, including this episode, 3 episodes before there's no episodes for the next 3 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
Which is close on to a month of vacation time. Yay.
I'm so excited.
I'm not sure what to do with the next 2 episodes.
Okay.
So I was hoping we'd come up with something. Conditional blindness. I've never looked it up.
It's definitely blindness at the end, and I don't remember if it's conditional.
I've heard of it.
Or, yeah, yeah, but it's
I've
very
run
much.
I've across it in various contexts. Yeah, but that'd be interesting.
Bicyclists as well. You know, they're looking for cars.
Yeah.
They're on autopilot, and they will make eye contact you if you're riding a motorcycle and still pull out in front of you.
And still try to kill you.
Yeah, yeah.
They'll even smile when they do it.
Right? Well, that's a thing.
Okay, so conditional blindness. Mm-hmm. Interesting. What else you got?
What else do I have?
Yeah.
Elephants amongst us.
Elephants amongst us.
Right. If you were... Because the alien species seems to be able to squeeze into human skin.
Right.
So how could we shrink an elephant in... That's a terrible one. That's all I had.
We're going to make mutant next time on episode 2. I want to mention Phil's show.
Oh, that's right.
Called episode 1. Mm-hmm. Every week we make an attempt.
Yes.
We're on take... 18,004 now. Still haven't got it right, but
get it right someday is the theory. Probably not.
I was thinking maybe accessibility technology, like screen readers or. That's my one example. That's the one I use. TTY, maybe the thing that translates for phone calls for the deaf.
Oh, that's right, actually. And there's some interesting. Speaking of the deaf, there's some interesting ways they go about fire alarms and such and so.
Oh yeah.
To
like the
still
lights
alert them,
for example, as an alert.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or a heavy bass, or I don't remember. There was a list.
Okay, we can get an episode out of this, all right?
There's supposed to be a solar eclipse happening at one point. Yeah, I don't...
Yeah, there's not much to work. Yay, an eclipse. I had another idea.
Is there any psychological distance? You think about festivals, right?
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of solar eclipses, there was a big one recently, and people were going down to Oregon in droves because that was the place to see it.
Droves? Or herds?
Do we
or
call
crowds?
Those herds? What do you call a herd of humans? A drove. Anyway, so... yeah, but there's a certain craziness to that. I don't know.
It's bothering me. I had
there's
an idea.
Something there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can feel it trying to leech its way out.
Oh! What about 3D printing?
Yeah,
exactly.
How does that happen? What are the additive?
Additive manufacturer or whatever. Yeah. I might want to buy one of these days. Mm-hmm. Speaking of accessibility and technologies, I think there's various ways we could apply a 3D printer. Just for an example, say you've got some picture in a book of a graph.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you blow it up to some ridiculous size, and then you say every dark line is raised by, I don't know, eighth of an inch.
Yeah, yeah.
And otherwise make the white places lower,
mm-hmm.
and suddenly you got a raised line diagram that I could feel, finally.
Right? Especially that Euclidean, this, whatever.
Oh, yeah, yeah, all the stuff that's in the one plane, as it were.
Mm-hmm. You can apparently they 3D print freaking metal. I hear that's a thing.
I don't particularly need that.
We can build our own car.
It'll be invincible.
Robot arms are just going through the motions.
It's the Emperor's new ride. In 1962,
uh-huh.
The USSR put several missiles in Cuba.
This would be the crisis. The
Cuban Missile Crisis,
okay.
Yes. Major effect on the American political landscape.
Very much.
And in fairness, we had set up missiles in Europe that were at least as close.
Yeah.
So we were already breathing down their neck.
We don't talk about that.
And this was sort of in response to that.
Mm-hmm.
And during the 1962 election, there was a lot of rumors that the United States knew that there were missiles there.
Okay.
But not telling the public.
Wait, so we didn't know?
The public did not know, but there were rumors.
Mm-hmm.
But then a U-2 spy plane flew over Cuba
And
sent back unambiguous pictures. Yes, there are.
Well, that's definitely a missile. You can't mistake that for anything. That's a missile.
So all these big, expensive computers that were being used for various military programs, they were vulnerable to attack. And like, how can we build in some sort of redundancy into this thing?
Mm-hmm.
So I thought maybe we can network together these computers.
Oh.
So that if any one of them is taken out, the other will keep working.
Sounds good.
And we'll use wires because atomic blasts will screw up your ionosphere. Which means that whole shortwave radio thing ain't going to work for you no more.
Sounds good, yeah.
So they created ARPA. Out of DARPA in 1966.
Aardvarks and friends. No, never mind. Good old ARPA.
They went with a model that you could call terminals and mainframe.
Where
the mainframe was mainly responsible for initializing programs in the terminals and sending data.
Okay.
The first message was between UCLA and Stanford.
Oh, cool.
And they were on the phone talking to the other guys while they were trying this out. They type a letter. Well, we just sent an L. Did you get the L? Yeah, we got the L. They were planning to send the message login.
Yeah.
But lo and behold, they sent low. Two letters made it. The third letter crashed the system.
Oh, the beginning days.
But you got to start somewhere.
Right. Sending a letter crashed the system. I complain if my computer's too slow these days.
Yeah, but by the end of that year, they had four different computers all within the contiguous United States, lower 48, as it's called.
Yeah.
In 1971, a radio-based computer network in Hawaii called the Aloha Network was added to the overall system.
Son of a buck.
And then they were like, hey, we have friends in Britain and Europe.
Mm-hmm.
What about them?
Yeah, yeah.
And they've been up to their own stuff in the meantime. In Britain was a growing commercial network where computers were being used to support business operations.
Oh, okay.
And in France was a growing academic and research collaboration.
Ooh.
Yes.
Yeah, I wish that had... We need more of that.
Meanwhile, this guy named Ray Thompson
mm-hmm.
came up with a way to send messages along these networks, which eventually became known as email.
Oh, hey.
And then somebody came up with Transfer Control Protocol, TCP.
Yes, indeed.
This was an attempt, actually, to deal with the fact that every network they were adding to the overall big network had its own protocol system. And by this time, there were several versions of packet switching going on.
Okay.
Where instead of trying to send the whole thing at once, you chop it up into packets and you send it along.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Along comes TCP, which is emphasis is on clarity and safety of the data.
Mm-hmm.
So it can run kind of slow, but it checks to make sure that you got all the packets, puts them in the correct order,
mm-hmm.
and if anything's missing or garbled, it sends a message and says, hey. Do that again.
Yeah. I kind of lost you for a second there. Your phone was cutting out.
Mush mouth. That's what we get for talking to the French.
They were the academics. What? Easy targets.
Anyway, that got joined by Internet Protocol.
Uh-huh.
So we end up with that TCP/IP, and anyone who's had to try and get their computer on the internet has bumped into that option.
Yes, indeed.
Then there's X25,
hey.
Developed by the phone company in 1974.
Okay.
This is to allow data connections
mm-hmm.
over the existing telephonic network.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The birth of dial-up.
Yes.
Now, this service was made available for a reasonable fee. Mm-hmm. And sure, there were a bunch of governments and businesses using it,
mm-hmm.
but so were hobbyists.
Yeah.
You get the birth of little BBS systems, bulletin board systems.
Yes.
You get Kermit, which was originally for a newsgroup thing
mm-hmm.
and just took advantage of lesser long distance rates on off hours.
Nice.
You get user groups, mm-hmm. discussion groups, bulletin boards. It's just a whole plethora of things.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't even quite the internet yet.
Mm-hmm. Wait, news groups too, right?
Yes.
Oh, IRC. Was that a thing? Internet Relay Chat.
Oh, you know, I bumped into that. They actually specifically mentioned chat programs.
Yeah.
And I didn't write any of that down. Okay. So.
Okay, we're moving on.
In 1991,
mm-hmm.
the official World Wide Web
yes.
was invented and offered to the world.
Oh, well, I'll take it. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Now, it's not quite the end of the story,
mm-hmm.
but it is the beginning.
Uh-huh.
To use the internet, you needed browsers.
Okay.
And at first, most of them were text-based. I remember good old Lynx.
Yes.
Used to use it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Still do occasionally when I just want it to load quickly.
All right.
1992, a browser called Urwise
oh.
comes along, and it was the first one with a graphical interface.
Okay, cool.
Where you could actually display pictures.
Hey, hot dang.
In 1993, you get Mosaic,
uh-huh.
which is the first one to turn into a household name.
Okay.
Which inspired 1994 Netscape Navigator.
There it is.
I was waiting. The one where it got really popular, and everybody had to have one.
Right. Yeah.
And companies like AOL,
mm-hmm.
who still exist, by the way, they're still kicking around.
You're kidding me.
And
this is the biggest news I've heard all week.
And CompuServe, who I think died, were offering dial-up to average customers.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere in the mid-1990s, fiber optics got off the ground.
Hey.
And it's interesting because the telephone companies wanted them.
Yeah.
The cable TV networks wanted them.
Mm-hmm.
And computer people wanted them.
Don't mean so many telephone poles. I mean, I don't know. Well,
I actually remember catching a video of one of these conferences where they're trying to figure out the protocols.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy from the cable company is up at the front of the room and he's drawing out a diagram about the actual physical network.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard somebody mutter to someone else, last gasp of a dinosaur.
No, no.
You were wrong. As a matter of fact, our cable company is our internet provider. And that is true all over the world.
Yeah, yeah.
There are other options, but that's a common one.
Very much. I mean, the network was already there. They had really high speeds they could offer, and it was minimal upgrade
yeah.
to your household to make it work. And yeah.
Yeah. So there.
They figured it out.
And I suppose people still use dial-up somewhere. It's still possible.
Yeah.
Anyway, that is the birth of the internet.
Okay.
How it got started.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting issue with the internet.
Uh-huh.
Not everybody can use it, at least not right out of the box.
Yeah.
And for various reasons, say disabilities,
mm-hmm.
you may require some extra technology in order to access this exciting World Wide Web.
Right, right.
But we're going to talk about
yes,
that
yes.
next time. See you then.
Bye.